good allies and support from our families. This movement. I think we have been sharing ideas about how we can support indigenous communities and languages so that everyone has the right to live in their language and has a right to interpretation in any public space. Doesn't matter if it's social space or a state, a legal system. Everyone has the right to speak their language. Thank you, everyone. Arsenio, Ernesto, Puma, Saul, Endangered Languages Project, every organization. Thank you so much. Until next time. Till next time. Thank you.
You've been listening to the public forum, Building Community Networks of Dignity and Solidarity. Indigenous Language Interpretation is a Human Right. This was recorded on Monday, September 30th, in recognition of International Translation Day, and organized by the Endangered Languages Project, a global nonprofit headquartered in Portland, and they seek to amplify the critical work these organizations are doing in providing accessible, culturally informed interpretation, upholding and advocating for the human and linguistic rights and dignity of indigenous communities. Thank you for tuning in to KBOO as we celebrate and recognize Indigenous
Peoples. Hi, I'm Jill Fritz with the Humane Society of the United States, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
And today, Monday, October 14th, here at KBOO, we celebrate and recognize Indigenous Peoples Day. And now, we will share with you a poem by Joy Harjo. Remember the sky that you were born under. Know each of the stars' stories. Remember the moon. Know who she is. Remember the sun's birth at dawn. That is the strongest point of time. Remember sundown and the giving away to night. Remember your birth, how your mother struggled to give you form and breath. You are evidence of her life and her mother's and hers. Remember your father, he is your life also. Remember the earth whose kin you are. Red earth, black earth, yellow earth, white earth, brown earth, we are earth. Remember the plants, trees, animal life, who all have their tribes, their families, their histories, too. Talk to them, listen to them. They are alive poems. Remember the wind, remember her voice. She knows the origin of this universe. Remember, you are all people, and all people are you. Remember, you are this universe, and this universe is you. Remember, all is in motion, is growing, is you. Remember, language comes from this. Remember the dance language that life is. Remember. Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio, Portland, as we celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day.
We're Caboo.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Hi, Stephen.
We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers. We host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today, we have Sam Johnson and Jessica Cantu. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks.
Yeah. Well, we're going to ask you a bunch of questions and, you know, feel free to, I don't know if you want to go in a particular order or just jump in, however, but why don't you start by just each of us telling us what you do as an educator and where you work?
Sure. My name is Sam Johnson. I teach culinary arts at Sam Barlow High School in the Gresham Barlow School District. The students call me Chef Sam.
Great.
And I'm Jessica Cantu. I teach at Reynolds High School, teaching English language development, mostly newcomers.
Nice. And tell us real quickly, what inspired you to go into education?
So I worked in pastry before I got into education. So my background is actually not in education. But after working in resorts and restaurants for a lot of years, I wanted to do something that had a larger impact. I was working in Alaska, and they have a program for industry professionals to get a teaching credential while they are teaching their subject. So I enrolled in that program. It's a two-year program where you get to teach and take education classes at the same time, and you leave with a teaching license.
Great. Nice. And it looks like we lost Jessica. Hopefully we'll get her back here soon. Now I know that you wear a union hat as well, Sam. So what role are you playing with your union?
I am the organizing chair, which means my main task is getting our members engaged and involved and taking those actions that as a union get us toward our goals.
Yeah, great. All right. Well, hopefully we get Jessica back.
But in the interim, we will carry on. So we invited you to talk about what's going on with your local and district. Both Gresham Barlow and Reynolds have been bargaining for a while. When you went into bargaining, did you have a sense of what the most pressing demands were, what your members cared about the most? What are your members most excited to add or change to their contract?
The biggest concerns for our members going into this bargain were around time and workload. So protected prep time, class size and caseload. Cost of living increase was definitely a priority, but it was not the highest priority for a substantial portion of our members. A lot of our members really are feeling the strain and the burnout of large classes. Many of our specialists have untenably large caseloads. And so going into this bargain, our bargaining team is really hoping to bring some class size and caseload limits to the table, which is something that has never been in our contract. So that's exciting that we're hopefully going to make some progress toward a more sustainable workload for our members.
And before we go back to Jessica, who is back with us, I just want to ask a follow-up about the bargaining for class size and caseload limits. How responsive has the district been to those conversations since it's not considered a mandatory bargaining issue?
Frustratingly, they are focused more on the financial side of it than anything else. You know, the bargaining team for the district has made it clear that it's too expensive of a prospect to limit any kind of class size, that they would have to hire more educators, which is obviously what we want them to do to make sure that we have sustainable class sizes. So they haven't necessarily engaged on the topic the way that we are hoping to. Our bargaining team has not backed down from class size and caseload limits. We are trying to find some kind of middle ground where maybe we start with class size limits at the elementary level and with special ed and then move from there. But it seems like the district has not been responsive or wanting to engage in what class size limits look like in practice.
And then Jessica, since you are back with us, we're just going to go back a couple questions and just ask you to share with us what inspired you to go into the field of education and also your role in the union.
Sure. I really liked school growing up. I had a really good experience in school, and teaching seemed like something that I could do. I was like, ooh, I could be here all the time. But one thing that I hated was history class. It was awful. It was like a giant book in front of you. You just had to memorize things and then take a test. And I went to college and I studied history, and I was like, this can't be how we do this. It's too important. So that's what I chose to focus on, because I wanted to change the way that history was taught in high schools. I wanted students to see how awesome and important history was the way that I learned through college. So that led me towards a career in teaching history in high school, which lasted a year before I was switched to ELD, which is where I've been. And I found that I really enjoy teaching students who come from other places around the globe. And oddly enough, being that I'm a history major, those things kind of melt well together. So I've enjoyed it. And then as far as the union, I am the organizing chair for Reynolds, and I am also on the bargaining team this year.
Excellent. And so when you came back, we were discussing the bargaining that's been going on in both your districts. And so I'll ask you the questions. When you went into bargaining, did you have a sense of what members cared the most about and what your members most wanted to add or change to the current contract?
We surveyed our members early on before the bargain started to kind of get a sense for where people were at. And, of course, things like concerns over insurance and, compensation were pretty high for a lot of people. Things like class size and caseload were also way up at the top too. That impacts the work you do day in and day out. So it makes a lot of sense that that would have been at the top for a lot of people. And then there were a few other smaller things like language in our article on student discipline. There were a lot of people who felt that it was too squishy and wanted more clarity around how to keep students and staff safe in the classrooms. So those were the big ones.
Excellent. And for both of you, I know we touched on this a little, Sam, in terms of class size, but how has the district responded in the bargaining process overall? And how would you describe the mood of members, engagement from members, turnout to open bargaining sessions?
The district this year brought a surprisingly low amount of things to the table, which shows that our current contract is working better for our district than it is for our members. So that's been frustrating. It seems that the district is seeking just far fewer changes than the union is. So our bargaining team really tried to bring some creative solutions to the table to get our members more prep time. They are really hoping to get, especially our elementary teachers, protected prep time. Often we are given a total prep minutes, but how that time is allocated isn't always in meaningful blocks, or it can be interrupted for meetings or crisis or even something as simple as bus duty, right? It takes away from that time our members have. So we brought a lot of changes on time, including getting that protected prep time. And we even proposed a 4-day instructional week, similar to what's happening in Estacada, where that fifth day is used for targeted intervention, extension, things that will serve our students who have the highest need. And the district really just was not interested in anything to do with time. And that has been a huge frustration for our members at the open bargaining sessions. There's definitely a feeling that things are moving very slowly. And I'm sure that's true of the many locals who are working into this school year without a contract. So the frustration is definitely rising. We are hoping that that frustration turns into a little more action. We have a pretty large membership in the GBEA, and we're kind of seeing a lot of the same people stepping into roles and doing the work. So we're hoping to kind of spread that work out, get more of our members engaged, and hopefully that'll lead to some movement at the bargaining table.
Our bargain, I feel like there was a lot of hope when we went into the bargain because we had a new superintendent who a lot of our members were excited was back in the district. And then the first few bargains kind of proved that there wasn't a lot of interest in working collaboratively with the members. And I think that really dampened the mood for members who were showing up and who weren't showing up. There was a lot of disappointment, I think. And I can agree with Sam that like things have been moving at a snail's pace. There just hasn't, because they're kind of unwilling to work collaboratively. It feels like not a lot of progress has been made, especially in some of the areas where members feel like are the most important and the most important things to be addressed in the contract. So, so turnout has been kind of up and down. We've had some sessions where there have been a lot of people there, and then we've had some where it's really dipped. And we do have a lot of the people also who keep coming back and coming back. And but I will say, at this last session we just had this last week, we had 180 people turn out. So it was amazing to see people feel compelled to come and really have a voice and put pressure on the district. So we're hoping that that momentum is maintained throughout the rest of the bargain.
That's amazing. That's a good turnout for sure.
Yeah, Jessica, why do you think the turnout was quite a bit more at this last bargaining session? Any ideas?
I think there might be a couple of reasons. I think there was some anticipation around what the district has created a financial package that they have given to us, and they were supposed to be coming back this last session with like a new version of it. So I think there was some anticipation around seeing what they were going to bring to the table. But also, we changed our strategy a little bit, and we utilized the building reps really hard this last time to go talk to people one-on-one, invite individuals to sessions, host sign-making events beforehand. And I think that really built some momentum. And when people are personally invited, I feel like that makes a difference rather than sending an email and hoping that folks come. So I think those two things combined were what really brought people out.
Great, thanks. And I know that at Reynolds, there isn't a separate contract action team. There's an organizing committee. And how about at Gresham Barlow? Do y'all have some kind of committee that's formed just to support the bargaining, or who's doing the outreach outside of the actual planning for the bargaining session?
So we are actually starting a contract action team to try and get some momentum around this bargain. One of the most heard complaints is just the pace things are going at, and things will move a lot faster if we have more of our members involved. Our building reps are great and they do a lot of heavy lifting for us, and we're hoping that by forming another team, we not only get some movement around this bargain, have more members involved in the work, but also it gives some of our members who are maybe newer or are just coming off of something like a probationary contract a chance to get more involved in the work. So we're working on forming a contract action team right now. We have some actions that we'd like to take that will be better coordinated with presence in each building. So if there are any GBEA members listening, come join the contract action team.
All right, there you go. Well, hey, if listeners, if you're just joining us, if you joined us late, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio. And unlike corporate media, KBOO is commercial free. We rely on you, the listener, to function and survive on the air. So please, if you're able, go to kboo.fm/give to make a one-time donation, or better yet, a become a monthly donor. One more question before I turn it back over to Rachel. What are you doing to increase the pressure on the district now to win a fair contract? You've sort of talked a little bit about this, but any sort of other things you want to add in terms of changing tactics to escalate the pressure?
We, as a bargaining team, they had worked toward putting a lot of our final concerns together into a package deal to try and get some movement around the things that are most important to our members. If that does not take and we're still not getting movement, we are happy to separate them out again and go through all the nitty-gritty details that the district does not seem to want to talk about at the table. So adjusting what we're doing based on how engaged with the actual work of the bargain the district has been, it's been getting some movement so far. We have an outgoing superintendent who retires at the end of the year. He has stated that he would like this bargain done before he leaves, and we are happy to wait it out if it means that our demands are met. So we are in no rush if the expectation is that we're giving more than we are willing to do so. So I think time is on our side. As much as it's frustrating to move slowly, we know that we are more invested in getting a fair contract than being done by a timeline that serves our administration.
And as for REA, we also just put together our own little mini package that we're going to approach the district with at the next bargain. So we'll see how they respond to that, since they seem to like packages so much. And we're going to keep asking people to invite people to our bargaining sessions in the hopes that this larger crowd that showed up last time will grow. And I think, I don't know if it was just me, but I feel like our superintendent was not very happy that we had so many folks show up this last session. So I don't know if that works in our favor, knowing him, but I'm hopeful that the rest of their bargaining team, the district's bargaining team, will feel that pressure, knowing that people are watching and paying attention.
Excellent. Have you had conversations with your members about preparing for the possibility of a strike if the district continues to hold out on the priorities of your members?
The possibility of a strike has come up, especially with the recency of the PAT strike. I think people see what it looks like in action and understand what the power of the strike, how it can really be a tool that can get a lot of movement. Right now, we're definitely not at the point where we're looking at a strike as the next possibility. We've got a lot of steps in between. So while some of our members are frustrated and talking about a strike as an eventuality, we're hoping that they'll take that frustration and utilize it for action that might get some movement early on. Gresham Barlow EA had a strike in, I believe, 2012 that lasted a grand total of 4 hours. So it's been a while since we have gone down that route, and we would need to do some internal buildup for sure to make sure that any potential strike is successful. That's probably true for most locals, that, you know, there's a lot of steps in between. So it comes up, but I hope that that will turn into more movement around bargaining now, because I do think we can get the wins that we're looking for. All of our asks are very reasonable, and the district can afford them all, even if they disagree with that point.
I know in REA, there have definitely been individual folks, maybe small groups of folks, who've asked questions around where we're at in terms of a strike or if we'd be willing to do that. And right now, I think it's mostly just conversations with people. And we have had a strike in our district. It was before I was working there. So those folks who were part of that bring it up because they were there and they know what it's like to go on strike. We had recently put up posters that show the timeline from when bargaining starts to a strike, just so that folks have an idea of like what are the steps you take before you can get to that point. But in terms of a larger conversation around that, we haven't gotten there yet. I think the next few bargaining sessions that we have will be, will help kind of help us shape whether or not we need to go that route. If there's movement, I don't think we need to have any further conversations. If we don't see a whole lot of movement, we might start to have to talk about what that might look like. But right now it's just little bits here and there, I think.
Do you all have a sense for how supportive the community is? Have you been in communication with parents around the bargain, or educators and union members in neighboring districts?
We do seem to have a lot of community support, especially right now, as the safety concerns at Gresham High School have been a topic that has engaged a lot of the community recently. There are conversations going on in the community of Gresham about what is actually happening in our schools and what we can do to make sure our schools are safe, are functional, that our students are getting the experience at school that they deserve. So that has been a good thing to see. I do think it will take some work to get on the same page of what the community wants from specifically Gresham High School and what is going to benefit our school district as a whole. But the community does seem to be really interested in what's happening in our schools right now. And as the people who are in contact with their students on a daily basis, who really see the reality of what it's like to work in their classrooms, they do see our teachers as a trusted source of information, which is huge when there's so much debate and mistrust happening in our community right now. So we've gotten some good parent support. We've also felt a lot of really great support from our other East County locals out here. Our East County Uniserve is a great source of solidarity. It keeps us all kind of on the same page with what's happening in the other locals and what it's really like day to day in the other districts that are closest to us. And I think that's a real benefit for all of our locals to have that solidarity with each other, because in East County, where we're a lot of small districts, it's easy to pit one against the other, right? For admin to say, well, we have a better contract than this, or we have a better retention rate than, you know, another district, and by our locals being in solidarity with each other, they can't use the differences in our contracts, which are minor overall. We have a lot more in common than we do disparate. So I appreciate having a strong Uniserve out here and having those locals in contact with each other on a constant basis and really keeping up the support for each other.
We, as an organizing team in the last year, had tried to figure out ways that we can be more in contact with and in communication with parents and community members. And something that started to develop was like a newsletter that would go out to families. And we were going to work towards that newsletter being a two-way communication street. But it hasn't fully gotten off the ground yet. It's still in the works. So at the moment, we don't have an awesome way to get like a more district-wide temperature on how families are feeling. But I know from just like conversations I've had with families who come in for back to school night or conferences, and other educators who have conversations with families, that like Sam said, I think they have a lot of faith and trust in us as educators. Like, I don't get the sense that the community doesn't trust us as the people who they're sending their children to hang out with every day. So, while I don't know exactly how the community is feeling, I, based on just personal anecdotes, I feel like our community would be behind us. And it doesn't mean that we wouldn't have to do work to make sure that those who might be skeptical did understand why we were moving in the direction we were moving, because